And now, this is the DDT Wrestling Podcast with DC Matthews and Doc Manson.
Doc Manson at Doc Manson. I will value this conversation for as long as the internet connection is good. How the hell are you?
I'm doing all right. DC Matthews at the DC Matthews. I think we might have finally found our lucky strain? Vein. A lucky vein of internet. That's what I'm looking for. This looks like this one's working out for us.
So. All right. Well, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the Skype update. But either way, it is a pleasure to see you and talk to you. Before we were having such poor connection, we were both commiserating on how 2024 really, in the first, quarter, not our year.
Yeah, not really our year. It's not working out so well. I mean, we normally peek behind the curtain. Normally we start recording right around 6:30 in the evening. This right now, because of all these issues that we've been having, it's now 6:53, folks. We're 23 minutes late. This is almost like GQ was joining us for a show again. That's what kind of delay we've had on this episode.
Don't tease me.
We love you, GQ.
I was waiting. One of my favorite DDT wrestling moments of all time. You and I are getting set to record, and all of a sudden, that gorgeous bastard slides into frame. He was at your house.
Oh, yeah.
That was a delightful
what
experience.
What episode was that?
Oh, I don't remember.
It must have gotten deleted, but regardless.
I don't remember. But either way, latest update, again, behind the curtain. I went to the dentist on March 1st, and the hygienist noticed an interesting white patch on the side of my tongue.
So and was it a growth or like just a patch? Like
it almost looked like almost like a burn or like silver skin on like a piece of meat.
Okay.
And it was on both sides, which she said was a good sign. Symmetry apparently was good. Yeah. The dentist took a look, kind of went, okay. The belief was at the time that I must have a sharp tooth or something that scrapes against the side of my tongue and is causing some sort of abrasion.
But on both sides? That doesn't make sense.
It's more pronounced on the right side than the left
side. Oh, okay. All right.
Gave me, sanded down what he thought the culprit was, gave me some sort of medicated mouthwash thing, and said, come back in a month and we'll take a look and see if it's gone. And if it's gone, great. And if not, we'll talk about it. So I went back last week, and it was not gone.
What kind of mouthwash was it? Was it like an antifungal or something
it was
else?
I don't know. It was some sort of taste. It just tasted like water. It didn't particularly taste like mouthwash.
All right.
Okay. But it wasn't gone. And so the dentist was like, I would recommend taking a biopsy of it just because we don't know what it is. He was 95% sure it was nothing. Again, sharp tooth. I have a retainer behind my bottom front teeth left over from when.
Oh, that'll do it.
When I was a teenager, I was interestingly enough born without a significant amount of grown-up teeth.
I was missing one, just one though.
Which luckily for me included all four wisdom teeth. And that was never something I had to deal with. Was born without them. But I have baby teeth in my 40-year-old head, and there is nothing behind them. So eventually they will fall out. The retainer is perhaps helping, or they just haven't bothered getting rid of it. I don't particularly know. I suppose I should have asked. But so they gave me some Novocaine and cut a chunk out, stitched me back up. My tongue got very swollen, not surprisingly. Which is why we did not have a show last week, because I took a day off of work because talking was not quite something I was particularly good at the time. And so I am still waiting. It's been about a week. I'm waiting for the results. That, like I said, the dentist said 95% chance it's nothing. And, you know, again, they can sand stuff down. We can look at alternatives. There's a 5% chance that this might be some sort of pre-cancerous thing, though.
Yeah, possible.
Though, you know, he ran through some of the risk factors. I've never had chewing tobacco. That is something, or I'm not a smoker. I drink maybe once a year. This was hilarious after the fact. To watch him try to parse the words correctly. I am not, Doc Manson, orally promiscuous.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, that cunnilingus is going to...
I don't have the Michael Douglas.
Significantly increase the chance of various types of cancers, yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, as soon as you said the thing about the retainer, though, is that like a wire then that sort of... Yeah, because there are certain conditions that can be caused by... irritation. Usually it's like biting the tongue, or as you said, like, you know, part of the tooth, but it's also very common from wearing braces and things like that. And just having that wire in there long term, that definitely could be the culprit.
Yeah. I don't know my teeth, you know, I don't know which tooth is what, but off to the one side, there's a very pointy kind of tooth, and I will get canker sores right around that spot multiple times a year in the exact same spot. So I'm like, is it
that sounds a lot like that? Yeah.
Yeah. So is it that tooth? Am I literally like getting, cause it's not unlike, you know, a sort of large, canker sore. So, you know, there's still some discomfort. I just had my Trader Joe's turkey jerky for the first time in a week. I wasn't really testing myself on, certain foods. It's not pleasant, but it's way better than it was. And, you know, this is the first time anyone has ever used the C word for me.
Lingus?
Yes. It's that kind of life there, Doc. You know, I wouldn't say I am particularly nervous. I've had a couple of moments. The thing that has bothered me... I am a teacher of young children. I was a improviser, amateur completely. I was a trumpeter, and now I am a podcaster. I use my tongue and mouth quite a lot. Like, talking is sort of...
one of your things.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you fall down the rabbit hole of, you know, WebMD and all of that of possible options, and they're like, well, they can just remove the tongue and then it's fine. I'm like, no,
not fine.
That's not really something I'd like to pursue, please. Again, yeah.
Given certain situations, of course, that is a perfectly viable option, but yeah.
Understood. I am even more than 95% sure that it is going to wind up being nothing. And I'll have to, I called the dentist yesterday just to be like, it's been about a week. You said it would be a week. Haven't heard from him today. I'll let it go. But I'm like, are you just not going to call if it's nothing? I'd appreciate you telling me something. But so that's been the last week or so.
Yeah. And I think they will call you when they have the results, but it's just always been my experience with, I'm sure the dentists themselves have sent this biopsy, I suppose, off to a lab somewhere. And, you know, if there's nothing problematic, the chances are the lab would delay communicating back to the dentist versus if they did find something.
Okay.
Not to say it's always that way, but
that's the sense I've gotten. I have multiple medical professionals in my family. They've all said the same thing. They're like, if you've taken a week and they haven't talked to you, you're probably fine.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. But either way,
I'm sure it would be nice to have some
I was very bummed to not be able to podcast with you last week, not just because I enjoy your beautiful face every Wednesday.
Well, thank you.
But I have, Dr. Manson, I have notes. Nope, this is the wrong one. Somewhere I have
at least
a note.
4 pages of notes.
Somewhere I have a early notebook. This is Pro Wrestling Illustrated tournament notebook. But somewhere I have notes on the movie Gremlins, which I have seen and would like to discuss. So give me half a second to track down the right notebook. I have so many. And I'd like to know. Well, I know what you think. I've heard a podcast about it, allegedly. But where are we? There it is. So, yes, Dr. Manson was kind enough to share Gremlins with me. So I was able to watch it. I was able to pull it right up here on the old MacBook. It worked beautifully. I'm disappointed
that you haven't watched Gremlins 2 yet.
I've been a little distracted, I will freely admit. I watched a lot of Markiplier raging at Pogo Stuck. I was like, that's about where my head's at. So
Pogo Stuck.
Yes. It's one of those rage games a la Bennett Foddy. So if
he is currently playing a game called A Difficult Game About Climbing,
I'm enjoying that one, except the first three, he was just good. It was fun to watch, but I'm like, this has yet to be difficult. The most recent episode that I saw started to get a bit difficult. If you enjoyed him playing Getting Over It, you will enjoy Pogo Stuck. And Pogo Stuck has the first couple episodes and then a couple throughout the playlist, he's playing with Bob and Wade. And at one point in the game, you're on a pogo stick. You can't stop moving. You have to get up a mountain. And at one point, you have rubber band mode so you can connect to your friends via a rubber band. That is perhaps, I remember that was, you know, a very, very deep laughing fit watching the three of them try to navigate all being connected together and pogoing up. So if you haven't seen it, it's worth your time. Also worth your time, the movie Gremlins, though I will say, now that I've seen it, does it qualify as a horror movie? Does that count?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Because
I would say it is definitely a horror comedy, but it, I would say, tends towards horror elements more so than some horror comedies.
I can vividly recall, and again, I don't want to read 4 pages of notes to you, but I have a note that here, 48 minutes in was my first moment of tension and fear. And it is the, you know, and again, we're going to spoil the hell out of a 40-year-old movie here, friends.
Sorry.
The teacher, it's nighttime. And again, I made a note, no teacher is staying there voluntarily after dark.
Maybe in 1984, you don't know.
Maybe. But he's staying there. And, you know, at one point he's like crawling under the desk or the lab table to look for something. And that was the first moment that I felt that sort of, okay, we're going to get either a jump scare or something's going to happen here in this. But the beginning of the movie, not particularly scary by any stretch, just the 80s theme, the Warner Brothers music. I was like, oh, that hit me right in the nostalgia.
Yeah,
I'm thinking back and I'm like, I remember we owned 1989's Batman. We owned Michael Keaton's classic hit, Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
I had Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And I might have had a couple of others, but like there was, you know, people these days, young people especially, do not remember what it must have been like when your media options were whatever videos you happened to own.
Videos are first of all plentiful now everywhere you look, and second, I don't know if I've had this conversation with GQ or anyone else yet, but I think movies have got to be on the way out, right? Like, do the young generation watch movies anymore?
I've heard the same thing about television. You know, yeah. If it's not on YouTube, these people aren't watching. you know, it's WrestleMania weekend. Eventually, we'll probably touch on that. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch were on YouTube doing some GQ 10 things I can't live without. And their 3-year-old child is obsessed with YouTube. Like, I think that's which is funny because there are more and more content creators leaving YouTube at this time. But that's where it is. You know, most of the people I know and the kids in my class especially are watching things either on Disney Plus or Netflix or YouTube. That's pretty much the only places I think they're getting their content.
And the thing that I keep hearing about is how, like, YouTube is on its way out. Like, it's not being part of the reason why I think some creators are leaving. Yeah, the algorithm is bad and all of that. But I don't think, like, the pay is necessarily as good as it used to be. And I think part of that's because I don't know if the watches are what they used to be, unless you're one of the big channels. I think, you know, people are moving to even shorter form media, which is to say TikTok and the like. Mm-hmm. I think that has exploded in popularity. I'm not sure when you have a generation of people who have been, you know, raised on 5 to 30 second videos, I don't know that they have the attention span for an hour and a half movie, never mind a 3-hour movie.
No, a 22-minute sitcom is too long.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious where this goes long term. It makes me feel like it's a dying media.
Mm-hmm. I think people have realized that they can create their own, you know, sort of platforms. Like, we've talked about the fact that my wife and I will watch the Try Guys. I am predicting that by the end of this year, they're going to create their own sort of website and just have their own videos hosted on their own. And then they don't have to deal with YouTube and all of the, you know, they were doing some issues on marijuana and things like that. And they were running into a lot of things they couldn't say and getting their clips demonetized. And I feel like a lot of people are going to be like, look, let me just take ownership of my content here.
Quibi Quibi may have been ahead of its time.
You know, it might be. It honestly might be. Doc, who brings a dog to a bank?
Billy.
I want to punch that kid in the face. I want to punch that kid in the face even more than I want to punch Judge Reinhold in the face. And Judge Reinhold has a very punchable face. I spent a lot of this feeling very frustrated with Billy, because he just is an idiot. And I understand, given the situation, yes, he is an idiot. I don't often talk about this, but Phoebe Cates, she's in the movie. I don't know if you knew that.
She is. She has one of my favorite moments of all of cinema history in this film.
Which part is that?
The Christmas Story. The monologue.
She's told with such sincerity. Like she's really trying to, this is what's going to get me. This is going to lead directly to an Oscar.
It's Hold like on. 2 minutes of her talking to the camera.
Let me emote for you.
It's insane.
Did you play I don't think you did, but I feel like if you were to have done a podcast in which you talked about this movie with somebody else who might be even more of a horror fan than I am.
Definitely never did that.
I feel like you might have played the entire monologue. So, like, she started and I'm like, I've heard this before.
It's just, I know, like, the director of the film, Joe Dante, you know, he's done a lot of stuff and he has a very odd sense of humor. And, like, I think this was filmed and I think, like, the producers try to talk him out of having it in the film. Like, they did everything they could to try to get it removed. But, like, producer, executive producer, but also on this film with Steven Spielberg. And apparently to a conversation between Spielberg and Dante, and Spielberg told him, look, it's ultimately your movie, your decision. If you think it needs to be in there, then keep it. And Joe Dante did. And I think it's such a strange moment that you do not get in most any movies. And a movie like this, I can't really articulate whether I think it's actually out of place or if I think it's perfect with the tone of the film. I think it might be perfect.
It gave me Airplane vibes.
Mm.
Like that sort of thing.
It's the movie letting you know that it's practically a spoof of itself.
Yes.
Right? It is a spoof of old sort of creature featurey stuff. It's almost playing out more like a 50s movies in a lot of ways. And yeah, it just sort of has that meta element to it, which makes me appreciate it. And I got to tell you, DC, I'm real excited for you to watch Gremlins 2 because, oh boy, there's more to talk about.
Are there more characters in that show up in this? Does Mrs. Daigle show up? Because I feel like we have this evil, wicked witch character, Mrs. Daigle. And then unless I missed it, and I was trying to pay attention this entire time, I like really wanted to do a good job understanding this movie so we could talk about it. Do the gremlins ever like eat her? Did I miss it?
Who is Mrs. Daigle? Is she the one who goes flying off the stair thing? Or is that someone else?
I didn't think so. Maybe that was that her? Mrs. Daigle is the one who threatens to put the dog in the spin dryer on high heat.
I'm pretty sure that's the one who gets
okay.
her.
She must have had a wig or something.
Yeah.
That would make way more sense because I texted you and GQ. That chairlift got some serious spring or something like that. That would make way more sense. Okay.
Yeah, she gets her comeuppance.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, Phoebe Cates is wonderful. Zach Galligan's Billy is wonderful.
I'm sorry. Hoyt Axton? That is a fantastic name.
And the funny thing about him is, so he plays the father figure in this film. And I don't know why. It's like a Mandela effect style thing for me. When I think about Gremlins, I always think that the father is played by John Candy. I don't know why, but that's immediately where I think. I think it's because John Candy wears a very similar outfit in Uncle Buck,
yes.
where he's got like the gray.
He has an Uncle Buckish. I love the opening where it's because like we get no explanation. It's just we're in this city. It's, you know, obviously Chinatown style, and this guy just is like wandering in. Look, I was just like, all right, I'm in.
We're in for this.
Let's see.
Dick Miller, a regular of Roger Corman films, playing Mr. Futterman.
Yes.
He's wonderful. And he does return in Gremlins 2.
I appreciate the inventions. I liked that Dad was an inventor. I liked that, you know, the ideas man is never the person who actually makes the stuff. He's got great ideas. He just needs someone who's a better engineer to actually create. It gave me, especially when he's like getting stuff ready for breakfast, I was like, now I got to watch Pee-wee's Big Adventure because I want to watch the Rube Goldberg toast maker and everything like that.
I'd like to see the Rube Goldberg machine from the start of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Also good.
Yeah.
There is an orange in this movie that holds more juice than any orange I've ever seen before in my life. And I'm sorry.
How did you like the kitchen attack scene?
I want this movie to be remade with Mom as the hero.
Okay.
Because that mother, I don't know the actress's name, but that mom kicks some serious butt against those gremlins in the, you know, in the kitchen. And I was just like, she's way more in like with it than Billy or you know, anybody else is in terms of fighting these things. I enjoyed seeing Corey Feldman pre Goonies.
Yep. Real early on. That's for sure. I think that's Frances Lee McCain. She showed up in Back to the Future, Footloose, Stand By Me. So, like, she ended up in a lot of different memorable 80s films.
Until the monologue you mentioned, my favorite line is also said by Phoebe Cates when talking about Christmas. When everyone else is opening up their presents, or when everyone else is opening presents, they're opening their wrists. I was like, Jesus.
A little dark, huh?
But again, you understand why when she talks for 2 minutes. I also want this to coincide with, have you seen, I'm assuming you have, the Goes Wrong Show Christmas episode, not the Christmas Carol, but the one in which one of the characters gets stuck in the chimney. I'm really very badly burned.
Yeah, it's yes, that definitely tracks with that monologue. That's for sure.
But
you know, I think this movie, I think it is a horror movie. There's grossness, there's scary creatures, there's intense atmosphere. There are these, you know, fight sequences. But yes, while some of that stuff I think can be tense, and I think there's tension in the climax of the film as well, going through like this, the department store or sporting goods store, whatever that is at the end. But like, yes, most of this is played for comedy. These gremlins get into different things and they're just having a good time, right? Like the bar scenes, the movie theater.
I want to know which gremlin, like how'd they learn how to put on lipstick?
It appears
there's either one female gremlin or there's just a male gremlin who enjoys wearing women's clothes, which is totally fine. No judgment. Do gremlins?
I just am going to reiterate that you need to see Gremlins 2.
That is on my list.
If I were to say that Gremlins 1 is a horror comedy that leans to horror, Gremlins 2 is a horror comedy that leads very heavily to the comedy. Okay,
well, because this was funny.
There's hardly any horror in Gremlins.
I did not find a lot of horror in this. Yes.
Oh,
there is tension in the mall, in the shopping center at the end. But I think sometimes when I think horror, I'm thinking again Terrifier or things like that. And I remember being a kid being wicked freaked out by people under the stairs. But
there's people in gimp suits in that movie. That freaks you out on a level of reality that you weren't prepared for.
Very uncomfortable. That stuck, you know. But I wrote at one point, this is now a Stooges film.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, my all-time favorite horror movies, again, are horror comedies, but like literally fight choreography in Evil Dead 2 is lifted wholesale from the Three Stooges. Like slapstick to me has a perfect home paired with horror because you get that hot and cold, that run between suspense and breaking the tension with the comedy and setting you up to feel that tension again. It's a roller coaster that I feel like, you know, a lot of genres can't replicate. And I think I just horror comedies work for me in a way that a lot of other things, it's one of my favorite things in the world, I guess I would say.
Well, I will tell you, this was the perfect, again, sort of way to get me in, because now I'm like, yes, I want to see Gremlins 2. Yes, I want to see Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And, you know, and I'm sure,
if you don't find like looking at the gremlins horrifying,
no,
don't get me wrong, they're just rubbery suits at the end of the day, right? But they're menacing, they're gross looking, they're slimy, they have evil little eyes and they're hiding in Christmas trees.
But they had 80s, you know, those like the 80s large plastic eyes from like
absolutely
every toy I ever owned as a kid.
But
yes, I was thoroughly, you know, again, there was some mocking of it in terms of, you didn't even mention, she goes in, Gizmo's reactions to her monologue. I was just like
that. And Gizmo is ugly in this film as well. He gets a glow up between films. He's a lot cuter in Gremlins 2. I don't know why.
I thought he was very cute at the beginning. The, you know, it did not, it wasn't scary, but the eggs or whatever coming out of the back, that I was a little like, ugh. All right, that's cool. But which is why I wondered. I'm like, maybe they don't have a gender. Maybe they just, you know, if they're able to breed on their own, there's a scientific term for that, but I can't remember.
I mean, even in this film, there's, I think in the first one, there's a flasher zombie, right? At one point, it's not a zombie, a gremlin with a trench coat that opens the trench coat.
Yes. No? Yes,
and
that's true.
He gets kicked right between the legs. No genitalia on display that I could discern. So, you know.
They're in the movie. I love that they all went to the movies.
Love that they went to go see a specific movie.
Yeah. Well, and then there's a moment where you see the silhouettes of the gremlins coming. that I was like, oh, that's a very nice visual touch.
Yes, like, it's very cool visual.
Yes.
They do a lot of fun things in this film.
And then at one point, there's a very nice, very slow, haunting rendition of Silent Night being played in the background. I liked that quite a bit.
I just love the theme song to the film, too. Pure, like, 80s synth.
That's it. I'm watching that being like, are we just going to go through and watch like every 80s movie? Is that what this podcast is going to become?
That's going to be, I would gladly do that.
Because I'm like, 80s. That's it. Although I will say, I do want to watch Gremlins 2. I don't know if you've seen it yet. I have not seen it yet. But at some point on this show, we need to watch the Weird Al movie.
Oh, yeah.
Both. UHF.
You mean UHF or do you mean
both?
The clearly. Weird Al story or whatever.
Yeah, the Weird Al story with Daniel Radcliffe. Because I'm like, I feel like that.
Yeah, I'm down to watch that.
Yeah. Although now we have to also watch UHF, which I have seen before, but we'll happily watch again.
Agreed.
You'll have a ball on UHF.
Out of curiosity, what do you think about the fact that Gremlins is rated PG?
I didn't have a huge problem. There's some blood. There's some, you know, you can tell when the neighbor, I think is the neighbor who you're talking about? You mentioned some actor's name. I don't remember who exactly Mr. Futterman is.
Oh, he's the one. He's like he's a little older. He's like the kindly old guy who's Billy's friend. I think he's got like the plow thing.
That was it.
Move the snow.
So at some point, the incredibly fake 80s snow. At some point, the neighbor's talking about, you know, the foreign cars versus the, you know, the American machines. And you, like, I'm watching it going, all right, at some point, he's going to be killed with his own plow. And just, you know, there were some great moments that I am sure in 1984 were probably scarier than in 2024 when you're watching it, just being like, okay, yep, him and his wife, the car goes through the house. Yep, they're driving it. Okay. But I was thoroughly, I won't say sports entertained, but I was very entertained at, you know, my wife at one point was like, what are you doing in there? Watching Gremlins. Is this for the podcast? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Sounds like you're enjoying it. I am.
Did you laugh at all?
Oh, yeah. They're walking through this devastated, like, you know, there's a broken window. They crawl through the window. There's this, you know, obviously trashed place, like 15 seconds of them looking around and then Billy very deadpan. They've been in here. Yes, of course, Billy, they've been in there. The hell is wrong with you? So, yes, I enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing. I don't know how she knows where the boiler room is in the movie theater. Like, I couldn't tell you where the boiler room is. So they're in the movie.
Where does she work?
She worked at the bar at one point.
Okay.
She's at the bar. I love the in the bar scene where she's serving drinks to the gremlins. Obviously, you're scared, but you're. But yeah, so they go into the movie theater. She's, you know, I think they're in the theater. Where's the boiler room? And she's like, oh, it's down this way. I'm like, no one knows where the maybe in an 80s, you know.
Remember, in the 80s, in a one theater movie theater,
that's true.
It's a small town, you know, come on.
She was with it. Again, I wanted mom killing gremlins while Phoebe Cates tells us for 25 minutes how her father died.
That'd be beautiful.
Very enjoyable. I will also say I enjoyed transitioning here. I enjoyed WrestleMania weekend. There are some nits to pick that are sore.
Wait, you're transitioning to wrestling already?
Did you want to keep talking? I have more notes.
Oh, well, I've prepared a little segment that I like to call Behind the Fears.
The idea that you would prepare anything is both redonkulous and just, again, fills my heart with joy. Lay it on me. Let's get behind the fears.
All right. So I'm gonna read you four facts.
Okay.
One of these is false. You have to identify the false fact.
This is a great idea for a segment. I'm surprised no other podcast has done something like this. We are groundbreaking. Should I get my dolls? Where are my dolls?
Here's the first quote unquote fact.
Okay.
In Cantonese, The word Mogwai means devil, demon, or gremlin.
Okay. That sounds on the surface to be possible. I forgot about the whole thing that the guy shows up at the end. That also cracked me up. That, you know, he shows up to collect his, maybe Mogwai? Maybe he'll be ready later. Now let's watch him walk away very slowly. All right.
All right.
That sounds plausible.
The next one, a quote unquote true fact. An earlier attempt was made to have the gremlins played by monkeys, but this was abandoned because the test monkey panicked when made to wear the gremlin head.
There's enough facts in that to make it seem like it could be true, but that is ridiculous. Okay. I'm feeling nervous because, again, hypothetically, if there had been another podcast, you could be reading the exact same questions and I wouldn't know. I wouldn't remember. But all right. So first one, Mogwai means demon or devil.
Devil, second, demon, or gremlin.
Second one, monkeys as gremlins. Okay.
Yep. Third fact. The film was released on the exact same day as Ghostbusters.
That I want to say is true. I feel like somebody on some other podcast might have mentioned that. Okay, what's four?
And the fourth one is the set for Kingston Falls is the same one used for Back to the Future. Both movies were filmed on the MGM backlot.
I feel like a lot of 80s movies probably all have the same town sort of set. Okay. I have to ask.
Okay, go ahead. You can poke, you can prod, you can try to get some detail here.
The big question I have to ask.
All right.
Is this actually, there's only one of these that's false?
Yes.
Okay. This is not a Doc Manson version of this in which you've actually given me four false facts and there's not any obstruction in this.
There's not four false facts. It's not four true facts.
Okay.
I have mostly played this to the rules of the game.
What type of monkeys?
You know, I don't know. I'm going to assume, obviously, not a bamboo, not like a gorilla, not sure. a baboon. We're talking probably a smaller type, a lemur or something along those lines. But honestly, the source that I read that about did not specify the type of monkey.
Okay.
They talked about, you know, how there were like trained monkeys and things available that you could get from various agencies. So they thought that might be a way to go. But again, they couldn't work with the trainer to make the monkeys accept the little rubber appliances, I guess, that they were trying to add to it.
That was a very good defense of what I would have normally immediately thought was the false fact. So either you're very good at bullshitting or...
It does sound outlandish, doesn't it?
It does. And again, I'm looking at it through a 2024 lens. PETA would not let you use a monkey for that sort of thing.
Not anymore.
You cannot put a head on a monkey. based on that, I do think the Ghostbusters thing is true. The set could be different, but that's such a... That sounds so 80s. I will go then with fact number one. I don't know Cantonese at all. I wouldn't think they'd have a lot of G. That seems weird to say, but I will go with Mogwai is not Cantonese for devil or demon.
It in fact is.
Okay.
And not only is that fact true, they did in fact try to use monkeys to play the parts of the gremlins initially. And furthermore, it was released on the same day as Ghostbusters.
So it's the set.
And in terms of the set is indeed the same one used for Back to the Future. However, it was not filmed on the MGM backlot. It was filmed on the Universal Studios backlot.
Okay. I'm sure you
I just felt like I had to do that because, dear God, I hated that part of the show. It was just like,
okay,
one little thing.
Okay.
One little thing.
In that case, in the spirit of your nightmare scenario,
that never once occurred on a podcast that no one has ever heard of.
All right.
It didn't exist. But.
All right.
That, to me, that was always the spirit of the game that made me want to choke my imaginary co-host.
But see, that's the problem. That should not have been the spirit of the game. The spirit of the game should have been one fact is blatantly untrue, not, aha.
Yeah.
It was released on the same day as Ghostbusters 2.
Please, so. Ghostbusters 2 was released in 1989.
I saw that. I think we were watching some honest trailers for Ghostbusters. I did not realize there was a 5-year difference between Ghostbusters 1 and 2.
Yeah. And in fact, Ghostbusters 2 opens with the title card 5 years later. And in real time, it was, in fact, 5 years later.
Yeah. 1989 was a very good year for movies.
Was it?
Well, the Batman.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm sure others. I think every 80s year was a good year.
No, I believe 1989 is considered one of the best years for movies of all time. I think you're right, because I think it's... Geez. I think one of the Indiana Jones was that year as well. Well, I think one of the Back to the Futures was that year. I don't know which one. Probably three. Two.
No, maybe two.
But yeah, that is known to be one of the greatest years of movies of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I looked it up here. Yeah, so we're talking Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, Dead Poets Society, Back to the Future Part 2, Batman, Little Mermaid,
When Harry Met Sally. Oh, yeah, the start of the real start of Disney.
Yep.
Yeah.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, Lethal Weapon 2.
Yep.
Field of Dreams.
Yeah, I was like,
Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, there you go. That's a fantastic year.
Born on the 4th of July, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Ghostbusters 2, Uncle Great Buck, movie. Major League, The Burbs, Steel Magnolias, Sex, Lies, and Videotapes, License to Kill, Pet Cemetery, Henry V, Drugstore Cowboy, Parenthood, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The War of the Roses. I like that movie. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. You ever seen The War of Roses?
No.
It's a movie directed by Danny DeVito, starring Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner. Basically, it's like a married couple who are getting a divorce, and they basically try to drive the other one out of the house as part of the divorce battle. It's like a black comedy, but I remember it being pretty good. It's been a long time since I've seen it, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
I will very happily turn 1 or 2 weeks a month into an 80s movie marathon sort of situation.
I'm not buying The War of the Roses.
What? Anything else in regards to Gremlins before we transition to WrestleMania?
I think I'm okay now.
Well, thank you for going behind the fears with me.
I look forward to doing more of that in the future.
Do you know, did they come up with any good dolls?
Oh, yeah. Plenty of good Gremlins dolls.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some real good ones out there. NECA, I'm sure, did great justice.
Yeah. It's a shame no one really talks about it.
It's true. It's true.
WrestleMania was this weekend. It is finally over after SmackDown, Hall of Fame, NXT, Night 1, Night 2, Raw, and then NXT, the weekly show. Although WWE Speed was on Twitter today. Did you go on to X and watch WWE Speed?
Never heard of it.
All matches are 3 minutes or less. So it's basically WWE trying to get into TikTok.
UHF was also 1989. As was Roadhouse. And Kickboxer.
Did you watch Street Fighter? I know you and GQ had a action movie. I highly recommended Street Fighter.
We did not. I'm surprised, but I mentioned Street Fighter, and GQ had a very visceral negative reaction to even the thought of watching that movie.
It's terrible. Don't get me wrong.
But I feel like it comes all the way back around to being exquisite.
Raul Julia.
Yeah.
Is the best part of that movie by far.
I just love that Jean-Claude Van Damme is like playing the ultimate American soldier while being completely unable to maintain anything resembling an American accent.
No. Is that the movie in the, again, it was an Honest Trailers or a pitch meeting where like, I think he spent his entire salary on drugs that he then used during the movie. It's something like that. Some Maybe. Ridiculous.
I don't know.
Some ridiculous thing. I am going to presume that you watched zero of WrestleMania weekend.
That is correct. I was too busy watching Bloodsport.
That's a fantastic movie.
And
Frank Dukes.
Frank Dukes. And Commando.
Okay.
And the Jet Li movie.
Kiss of the Dragon.
Kiss of the Dragon.
Great movie.
And we also finished Perfect Weapon. We had started it last time. So 3.5 films.
Kiss of the Dragon's a fantastic movie.
I had never seen Kiss of the Dragon. And except for like one sort of lull dead center in the film, that movie kind of just goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm an outlaw. Da-na-na-na. Click on the draw. Yeah.
I also remembered how much I like Commando. That era, Arnold Schwarzenegger is incredibly entertaining.
I feel like I think I'm going to either print out or send to you. I'm going to print out like best 80s movies, and I'm just going to go through and highlight all the ones I haven't seen. And that will be, you know, multiple years worth of this podcast just going through, because I don't think I've ever seen Commando.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying.
What about Cobra?
Nope.
That's a good Stallone movie. I'm hoping to watch that the next time GQ comes over.
I don't know how many Rambos I've seen.
Have you seen any?
I feel like I must have, but I also might be thinking of the Charlie Sheen movies.
Hot Shots.
Yes, I've seen those.
That's a great movie, too. I have to find those movies. I actually like that little spurt of Charlie Sheen comedies. Major League.
Yep.
Major League 2, even. I like Major League 2. Some people hate that movie. I think Major League 2 is pretty good.
I don't know if he's in Hot Shots, the original, but Hot Shots Part 2, Ryan Stiles.
Oh.
Of Who's
Line. Oh, yes, he is. I was going to say, Charlie Sheen's definitely in the first one. Yeah, Ryan Stiles, yeah, I don't know about Ryan Stiles. He's in the second one, though. You're right. Long before I ever would have known him from anywhere else.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So here's the thing about WrestleMania. The matches,
it was overlong and there was too much of it.
Both nights clocked in under 4 hours.
That's good.
Each night. So okay. It was not super. I didn't stay up. I watched, you know, caught up the next morning.
That sounds reasonable for a single sitting, though.
There was some fantastic storytelling in the matches. But obviously, everybody's job was to talk about how this is a new era in wrestling. And whether it's the Triple H era or the Renaissance era, there's all of these new names. They're shoving down our throat that this is new and it's different and everything's going to change. And granted, again, great moments in the show. Sunday night, Triple H opens night one. So Triple H comes out, welcomes everyone to WrestleMania on night one. Stephanie McMahon comes out to welcome everybody on night two.
Stephanie McMahon, who last I checked had no attachment to this company in any way anymore. No shares, no job, no board position, no nothing, right?
She was,
that's weird. That's a weird choice.
She was front row for the Hall of Fame, sitting with Triple H. She pulled out an ECW, you know, leather cap that she wore during the Invasion era because Paul Heyman got inducted into the Hall of Fame. That was cute. Paul Heyman had a nice moment where he said, Stephanie, after all this time, you have to be true to yourself and admit you married the wrong Paul. And that was funny, but then proceeded to say, you know, From now until the end of time, I am a Paul Levesque guy. And again, I was like, that did not need to be said.
Yeah.
I don't know why. So Stephanie, you know, yes, whatever her position in the company is or isn't, it was weird. I would not have had a McMahon anywhere near this show.
I think Stephanie makes sense. I think in terms of the McMahons, like, she has a long history with the company.
Yes.
Fans seem to like her ultimately. Like,
I
think it's okay.
Again, it comes down to the how much did you know of what your dad was doing?
And I suspect we'll never know that answer.
I suppose that's true. So we get to the end of the night, and spoilers, Cody Rhodes finishes the story, beats Roman Reigns. We have a new Universal Champion, and we have a moment much like an 80s wrestling card. All the baby faces come to the ring to celebrate. Kevin Owens is there. Randy Orton is there. Seth Rollins is hobbling to the ring. He is obviously very injured. He's going to take some time off to heal. You know, all the baby faces come in to congratulate Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes takes a microphone and he invites two more people down to the ring because without them, this doesn't happen. The first one is Triple H, and the second one is Bruce Pritchard. Again, AKA Brother Love, but also one of Vince McMahon's right-hand people for much of the last 15 to 20 years, if not more. And again, maybe it's just me, but I would not have anyone who was part of anything that had to do with Vince, with the exception of Triple H, he's obviously running the show, anywhere near this. It just seemed weird.
Yeah, Bruce Pritchard, I think, is a strange name to trot out, but
yeah. Again, it, you know, the story was lovely, you know, and it was crazy because you have The Rock, who is part of this. So The Rock gets involved. Well, first of all, there's Usos who get involved. John Cena winds up getting involved. Then The Rock gets involved. He's got the weight belt. He's about to whip Cody Rhodes. Everyone's expecting Stone Cold. Everybody in the arena, everybody at home is expecting glass to shatter and Stone Cold to ride his four-wheeler down to the ring and fight The Rock. And instead, we hear a gong. The lights go out, and when the lights come back on, The Undertaker, in a hooded sweatshirt and a beanie, is standing behind The Rock, gives him a C-plus choke slam. The lights go back out again, and he's gone.
I mean, as much as I would like to see Stone Cold Steve Austin with a massive mullet, I don't know if you've seen the recent photos, but I think Stone Cold makes more sense as an adversary for The Rock, and I understand that this was an interaction with The Rock, but given the overarching story here has to do with Roman Reigns, I do also feel like The Undertaker being involved makes more sense from that perspective.
Yes. Well, and Austin was there a year or two ago. Wrestled Owens, looked great. Like that match, Austin versus Owens, which isn't really a match, but was fantastic beyond my expectations. I would not dare come back. I'd be like, look, that was perfect. So it was wholly sports entertaining. There were just a couple of moments that I'm like, all right, That's an interesting way to go with it. But everybody loved it. Everyone, many people are saying greatest WrestleMania of all time. We have a lovely moment at the beginning of night two. Drew McIntyre beats Seth Rollins in a fairly quick match because Seth Rollins is legitimately hurt and pushed through to drop the title to Drew McIntyre. So Drew McIntyre wins a world title in front of a crowd, which he was unable to do in 2020. So that is a great moment. The crowd, who has been booing Drew McIntyre this entire time, actually cheers for him when he wins, in sort of recognition of the fact that, you know, he's finally been able to win the title in front of the crowd. Now, he has been feuding with CM Punk. He injured CM Punk during the Royal Rumble. And he's been killing it. You know, I prayed for this and it happened. So CM Punk is out doing commentary. Drew McIntyre gets up on the announce table and is holding the title in CM Punk's face. Eventually, CM Punk snaps, takes off the arm brace that's, you know, holding his surgically repaired arm, whacks Drew McIntyre with it. Damian Priest, who is holding the Money in the Bank briefcase, comes down, cashes in, wins the title. So now Damian Priest, of all people, I don't even know if you know who that is.
No.
Damian Priest is your one of your world champions. Drew McIntyre holds the belt for about 5 minutes, and then CM Punk, you know, quote unquote, screws him out of the title. Very nice storytelling. Started out, you know. So it was a very good show. The matches were quality. I get it. It's a new era. I get it. You know, TKO and Endeavor are trying to buy out Vince McMahon left, right, and center. I think he's made multiple millions of dollars selling shares in the last couple of weeks, but
he might as well enjoy that money because he can't take it with him.
Yeah. And then AEW tonight, I don't know if you're going to be watching, I assume not, but if you want to watch AEW tonight, CM Punk did an interview in the WrestleMania week that I don't think Tony Khan liked. So tonight on Dynamite, the Young Bucks are going to show security camera footage of CM Punk's fight.
I heard about this.
Yes. I
assume they're not actually going to show anything. I also think using it in any sort of way is a bad move.
All of the journalists, and I use air quotes, all of the journalists are saying that it's real, that Tony's actually going to do it. They have the footage. He really didn't like what CM Punk said in the interview, and he thinks this is going to really embarrass CM Punk, so he's going to show the footage.
But, like, to what end? Just to insult the guy on national television?
I don't know.
I guess. It's like, you're not building a feud here. At this point, it's not a work. You're not building towards a program.
No. You're trying to embarrass him and make him look bad. CM Punk,
I kind of think it makes your show look a little bit like a clown show.
Oh, is absolutely.
How I feel about it.
It is. I think I tweeted this out. It's like he read the book, The Death of WCW, which kind of goes through all of the bad moves they made. And he's treating it like an instruction manual, because this is exactly what Eric Bischoff would have done in 97, 98, once it's similar to when Tony Schiavone announces that Mick Foley's going to win the world title. Yeah. Oh, that'll put asses in seats. See,
the thing with AEW is, if I like AEW, right, for the most part. I do enjoy watching those premium live events. It's always a good time. It's good wrestling. But the problem with AEW is, at no point do I feel like I would have benefited from watching any of the weekly television. I am very happy just watching those live events and just enjoying that in a microcosm. And part of that is, I think, because when I did watch the weekly television, they had trouble putting together stories that were actually continuing on a weekly basis with meaningful development. And so you telling me that you're going to spend 15 minutes of your show airing footage for something that has nothing to do with anything that's possibly currently happening on your show just seems like a bad move. You're already having trouble developing stories. Focus on that.
Yeah. Most of the people that I have seen online, and again, my timeline is very curated to what I want to see, but most people are interested in the same way you watch a car on fire. That's not what your company should be going for. So, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. NXT was very good. I would talk about what I saw, but you would know zero of the people.
Excellent. Very good.
That's not true. Baron Corbin was great. But
is he not Happy Corbin anymore?
No, no. He's Baron Corbin. He's teaming with Rick Steiner's son. Braun Breaker.
Breaker. I know that name.
So
I don't know what his face looks like, but I know that name.
He looks like a Steiner, really. We're an hour in. Let's get to our emails here. We have a couple. We have five of them because of the, you know, some of them I think are from last week. Tim, we haven't heard from Tim in quite a while. 402. You did it. 402 episodes. Banks had it right. Anyone can send an email on a special day. That's like getting the wife a present for Valentine's Day. Low-hanging fruit. But I digress. I am intrigued by the idea of some movie reviews and conversations around them. You're welcome. Gremlins will be great, but there are also Goonies, Zombieland, Shaun of the Dead, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, and so many more not great choices that will make for amazing conversations. I feel like your theme song is a Mandela.
Not great choices. Those are all great choices.
I've never heard of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Excellent.
Okay.
Probably one of the best horror comedies of the last decade.
Really?
Although at this point, maybe it's a little past a decade. I don't know. But yeah, that one's real good. It's got what's his name from Firefly in it. The
Nathan Fillion?
No. The pilot.
Alan Tudyk?
Yes, Alan Tudyk, yes. It was from 2010, so yes, we're a little past a decade.
All right.
But I enjoyed that movie. That movie I thought was quite good.
I feel like your theme song is a Mandela effect thing. I swear I heard it before I listened to the podcast as part of a WWE album, but I looked and could not find it at all. The new segment and dolls have the same thought. How interesting. I personally would love to hear each of the besties just saying DDT over some random noise. And just a reminder for each of you, Doc, regardless of your content, I could listen to you talk about damn near anything in your own special bantering.
Thank you. I had students this week say they love listening to my lectures. They said they were so impressed with how eloquently I talk about the subject, and it was really inspiring, was what they said. And this was like a small group of students that said this to me, and my heart grew three sizes, and then I had a cardiac event. And
it was did they follow it up by then saying, can we have an A, please?
Of course they did. Yes.
DC, I do listen to you banter. I finished the PWI 2005 trifecta today. Oh, you sweet man. It was perfect for my long drive to go to meetings. So if you decide to do movie reviews or watch-alongs a la MST3K or taste tests or read Poe, I, along with the tens of others, will absolutely be here for it.
Heck yeah!
We may not always tell you, and it may not be before the next episode is recorded, but we do listen, and we do love you. All the best, Tim. Tim, that is a fantastic email. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it, not just because you listened to my 2005 PWI redo, but I appreciate it. I'd like to believe we have a small but loyal group, and that warms the cockles and subcockles of my heart. Our next email comes from Pav Nickelodeon. Hey, guys. Obviously, there's been some negative and disturbingly horrifying press about Nickelodeon recently.
True.
On the Vince McMahon level. But as a positivity podcast, I wanted to ask about your favorite programs on there. My first experience of Nickelodeon was in the 90s, watching Rugrats and Kenan and Kel. But I really embraced Nickelodeon in the mid-2000s, around TNA's peak, by watching Drake and Josh and iCarly. I always thought that was Hannah Montana. I thought those are the same thing. I always liked the iCarly episode where Neville went head-to-head Monday Night War style with Carly's show. Ha ha! What a great episode. Carly was Megan from Drake and Josh. I never really watched their other content, like Saved by the Bell. My favorite will always be Drake.
That wasn't Nickelodeon, was it?
No. It was like
NBC. It might have been on like Nick at Night or something. Yeah. Like they might have put it in syndication, but yeah.
My favorite will always be Drake and Josh, which I still watch to this day. I love it. Especially the episode where they're in a police car as part of youth program that gets hijacked by a criminal. I also watch the Drake and Josh Christmas movie every year that was released in 2008. I recommend you all to watch it if you are looking to add to your Christmas movie itinerary. You will not regret it. Did you watch any of the above shows? Were you a Nickelite as a kid? Pav. Fun fact, owls' eyes are not eyeballs. Their tube-shaped eyes are completely immobile, providing binocular vision to focus on prey as well as enhancing their visual depth perception. And that is from the Audubon Society. I watched Rugrats.
Yeah, I was going to say, so Drake and Josh and iCarly were past us. Yeah. We were too old at that point. When Drake and Josh debuted, we were already finishing undergraduate studies in college, basically. So, yeah, we are a generation beyond
Drake and Josh. I don't remember watching Kenan and Kel, but I watched all that.
All right.
Which was the show they got their start on.
Yeah, I feel like the big thing on Nickelodeon when we were kids, at least the ones I were aware of, was they were sort of having a renaissance in animation at the time. So as you said, Rugrats obviously is one of them. Mm-hmm. I didn't like Rugrats as a kid, so I actively avoided it. But regardless, I think it's now clearly a huge pillar of that era of Nickelodeon.
Sure.
Also, though, like I also really enjoyed Ren and Stimpy,
yep,
which is a show that I can't believe was on Nickelodeon at this point. And I feel like they had another one around that time. I can't remember what it was, though. Oh, Doug. Doug started
Doug on
Nickelodeon, and that was wonderful as well. A little bit after those three, they also had Rocco's Modern Life, mm-hmm, which I think was also a quite excellent show.
They had Ed and Eddie, but that was, again, maybe a little past us.
Was that Nickelodeon?
I thought so. They also had Pete and the Adventures of Pete and Pete, but that was not animated.
Yeah, but again, Pete and Pete. What was that camp one?
Hey, Dude. Oh, no, Salute Your Shorts.
Salute Your Shorts. Like, those were big shows, I think, when we were kids. Salute Your Shorts.
It's I Hope We Never Part. Now get it right or pay the price.
Yes. Yes.
And again,
Pete and Pete, I didn't like, but I was aware of it.
And again, Wild and Crazy Kids, What Would You Do?
Guts.
Legends
of the Hidden Temple.
Legends of the Hidden Temple. Anything hosted by Summer Sanders. Yeah.
I used to like Mark Summers.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, all the Double Dare stuff. And there was a time there where he was doing like holiday specials. He did some sort of Halloween special where he was trapped in a mansion with like magicians, like an evil magician or something. I recorded that on my VCR and I watched the heck out of that thing. I can't remember much about it at this point though.
Yeah. No, that I think I am sure Drake and Josh is great. I'm sure iCarly is great, way past us. And, you know, right now there's some show, I think The Adventures of Henry Danger or something. Again, my students will watch some Nickelodeon, I suppose. They're familiar with it when we do, you know, go noodle activities or whatever. But, yeah. if you weren't watching the game shows, you missed out. Glenn sent in two emails again, probably one for last week, one for this week. This is his first one. Mount Rushmore.
Hi guys, just a short email this week. Who would you have on your Mount Rushmore of wrestling characters? Not judged by wrestling acumen, but by the strength of the character. Thanks, as always, Glenn Double N, period.
Not the strength of their character, not morally upstanding, but just character.
As much as I want to put Mantar on here,
I want to say it's Undertaker end of discussion.
Well, he is Undertaker for sure, but if it's Mount Rushmore, it's...
Yeah, it's four classic. Or five? It's classic. It's Ministry of Darkness, it's American Badass, and then it's, you know, sort of modern, not modern, but...
Nah, I disagree with that. I do think classic Undertaker is on that Mount Rushmore. Then I think it's like... Although this is weird because it's not as clearly of defined of a character, but I would say the joy of this is the character. I would say Macho Man belongs on that. For sure.
Yep.
Again, it's a weird way to define that as being quote unquote a character. He wasn't a plumber or a occupation, but he was a character.
Well, you could make the case for Ric Flair for the same sort of thing.
Agreed, although I wasn't a WCW guy or smaller promotion, so he never was really on my radar.
No, but again, that whole, you know, although you could do Dusty Rhodes for the same sort of.
You could, although again, in my worldview as a child, and this is where I'm coming from with this, Dusty Rhodes was a joke in polka dots who I could never understand why was a big deal. They did him dirty, I would say, in the WWF.
And again, are we talking about character like a, you know, the Undertaker character should not work?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I'd be tempted to put Hogan on there, but again, it's not really a character.
No,
certainly he's not getting on a wrestling acumen.
No,
Mount Rushmore. But like,
for
the
me,
big towering strong guy with the giant biceps and the take your vitamins, say your prayers. Like that's a character.
For me, you could make an argument for JBL, the JBL character, not Bradshaw, not Acolyte.
That was a good one.
The JBL character was really good, so much so that he's still kind of doing it. I know it's a version of, you know, sort
Here's
of.
Here's one that I don't know about, but I think it was a really, really strong character at the time. How do you feel about Carlito? Caribbean Cool. Especially that first run.
Yes, that was quite a character. I don't know if I would put him on a Mount Rushmore, but he's certainly worthy of talking about. You know, do you put Stone Cold? That Stone Cold character is pretty, you know, drinking beers, flipping off the boss.
I feel like if there's an argument for Hogan being there, then there's an argument for Austin being there. But I kind of feel like that makes me want to disqualify them both.
What about the Mountie? If you're putting Carlito on there, you got to put the Mountie on there.
I could put the Mountie on there.
Although you could make a case that the Big Boss Man did it longer. And
Big Boss Man probably deserves to be on there. Also, Snake Wrangler. Jake the Snake Roberts. Is that a character? Is that a character? I don't know.
Or
is it just a man with a prop?
As someone who has been watching Jake Roberts Million Dollar Man also needs to go on this list. Pre WWF, Jake Roberts is called Jake the Snake, has no snake on his tights, and then shows up immediately with the bag and the tights. And yes, that is most definitely a character. But I would say Ted DiBiase for sure.
Yeah.
For Taker sure. for sure.
Yeah.
Macho Man for sure.
How do you feel about someone like Bret Hart? Is that a character, the Hitman? I feel like the flimsy character.
It's a flimsy character.
Striking visual style, the sunglasses and all that. Like, it's striking.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it's a character.
It becomes a character over time. Same way that Ric Flair or even like a Hogan or an Austin becomes a character over time. But the Million Dollar Man is the, you know, the stereotypical super rich person. The Undertaker makes sense. Macho Man.
This is along the lines of Ric Flair, but a little different. But the stereotypical cowardly heel, I'd give it to the Weasel.
Definitely. I think I'd rather put Ravishing Rick Rude on there over the model Rick Martel. I think Rick Rude's character, you know.
Yeah.
Again, it's not necessarily easily defined, but you know what it is when you see it.
Yokozuna?
Yeah. It's a good one.
If it wasn't for all the cultural appropriation.
I'm noticing not any modern names. John Cena is not a character.
I did think about John Cena initially, but I don't think he's a character. Maybe rapper John Cena?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a strong enough character to go on the Mount Rushmore.
There's a separate conversation for people who were around so long and burned so bright that they themselves became the character. Hulk Hogan became a character to which we compared pretty much every wrestler since.
Like, I could see calling Mankind a character, but again, Mick Foley is the thing that it became, and the faces of Foley and all that became the real interesting part.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mankind alone doesn't get to the Mount Rushmore. Does The Rock get to Mount Rushmore? I don't think so.
He becomes the character of The Rock. I think when we're talking about character, we have to be going with a character that exists. Like, the stereotypical super rich, I'm going to step on everybody and use my money. You know, Vince McMahon is his own sort of version of that. And also evidenced by, you know, when Ted DiBiase was getting the pitch to come to the WWF, you know, one of the things that sold him was being told, this is what Vince McMahon would do if he could be a professional wrestler. This is a character that he would have. But
this might seem like a cop-out because Undertaker's already on our list. But what about The Crow, Sting? Obviously not WWF, but he just said wrestling characters.
No, I think that works, especially up in the rafters, for sure.
Yeah. I would also be tempted to say, again, this is seems like an odd choice at first, but I would also be tempted to say The Ultimate Warrior.
Yep.
Like, that is... persona is nothing but the warrior character, whatever that is loosely defined as.
This is not in your wheelhouse in terms of what you watched, but you can make a case for Raven. The grunge sort of, you know, my parents never loved me sort of character.
I'd love to see the Blue Meanie up there.
I would say, right now, having this conversation, DiBiase, Undertaker.
Yeah.
Savage. Again, the character's not really defined, but the charisma is so...
I just see the hat. I see the streamers coming off the arms. I just see the, oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, I just see it all.
DiBiase, Taker, Savage, maybe Heenan.
Heenan's like a pretty good choice, but he's got to be wearing the... He's got to be wearing the weasel suit.
Of course. All right. We'll hear back from Glenn in a minute. But first, Brandon, new format, Mr. Banks.
Well, I think we all know what the new format should be. Each week, you discuss what the format should be going forward. I mean, it's basically what we've been doing for 400 episodes. He's caught on, DC. He's caught on. The besties can chime in their thoughts and ideas. And then the following week, you discuss what the format of the show should be going forward. He's really caught on to our shtick here. The besties can chime in their thoughts and ideas. And then the following week, you discuss what the format should be going forward. So my thoughts and ideas for this week. I really think the ideas you came up with 2 weeks ago were all really good. However, it's been 2 weeks and I don't remember what they were. I'm comforted in the fact that you guys probably don't remember either. Maybe Doc should just eat a bowl of cereal on the air. It's happened before. And it will happen again. Keep up the work sent from my iPhones, plural.
that this is an email from someone who truly understands our product.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I did have that thought, actually, when talking about cereal. Because, again, I'm not sure how many actual types of cereal I've eaten. Like, it's
There was all sorts of cereals as a kid that I loved. And now, this would not have been at the top of my list. But now, the top of my list, and this is, again, from kids' cereals, but the top of my list now is Captain Crunch Crunch Berries. Yeah. It is the best kids' cereal, I think, of all time. And the fact that it is still maintained, there's depth to it, and there's sweetness to it, and it holds up in milk and just doesn't become paper mache mush after 30 seconds of being wet. Like, if you had one thing to complain about it, it's that it'll shred the roof of your mouth. But it is up there. It would not have been in my top five as a kid. It would have been Cocoa Pebbles and Fruity Pebbles and Cinnamon Toast Crunch and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Fruit Loops, yeah. Honey Smacks.
But, again, you just named a bunch of cereals I've never had. So I'm almost like, you know, do we do the great cereal?
The interest of all of our blood sugars, I'm going to say no.
I'm almost wondering if it's welcome to cereal of the week.
Okay.
This week, Corn Pops. Were they good in the 90s? I certainly ate them. Were they good?
No, they were not. Probably not. I would still eat some Corn Pops, though.
Our final email comes in from Glenn again, and this is a post-mania, a new golden era of wrestling.
Hi, guys. So the Paul Levesque era has started in WWE, and still great talent makes AEW watchable. Also, the positive things being said about TNA. Also, how strong the indie scene is looking both in the USA and the UK. Wrestling in general seems to be entering a new golden era. What are the things that you're liking the most, and what would you change to make the era go longer than any other in wrestling history? Thanks, as always, Glenn Double N, period. I would hire a bunch of writers who know how to write weekly episodic television, and this is the really radical part, I would let them do their jobs as opposed to constantly throwing the scripts out and rewriting it 12 times in the course of 45 minutes as the show has already started airing live on the TV network. I would just let them plan months in advance and follow the damn script.
Supposedly, they were planning for Damian Priest to cash in at WrestleMania 6 months ago. I don't know if that's true. That's what I saw online. But I think at least in terms of the WWE, I think long-term planning seems to be more prevalent. On the other side, I would take away Mr. Khan's ability to tweet anything except, hey, thanks for watching, you know.
Watch our pay-per-view. It's on this date.
Yep. Really enjoyed seeing Kyle O'Reilly wrestle so-and-so. Great action.
Possibly WWE put on a great show this weekend with WrestleMania. Congratulations for a wonderful, successful event. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I would like to see that.
And then I would figure out how to get him to not care what the other people are doing. Because right now, you are the little annoying chihuahua dog nipping at the heels of the older dog, the bigger older dog. You are diminishing the product in the eyes of everybody except for the people who have already drank the Kool-Aid. Focus on making your product as good as it can be. Your roster is redonkulous. I know I've said that word multiple times on this episode. Your roster is deep. It is stacked. Make your shows amazing. Make it so someone like Doc Manson wants to watch weekly, not just watch the PLEs. Focus on you and make your product really, really good. And yes, if you want to dole out a bunch of money for Mercedes Moné or Will Ospreay, or you want to put in an offer for a Becky Lynch, who apparently her contract is coming up. Seth Rollins' contract might be coming up. You want to make it competitive to maybe sign some top talent. Okay, I don't have a problem with that, but focus on your product. You have Okada, Ospreay, Mercedes Moné. You have all of these people, and all anybody's talking about is you're going to show footage of Punk wrestling fighting Jungle Boy in the backstage. You are wasting your time.
Choice. Yeah.
Thank you to Glenn and Brandon and Glenn again and Tim and Pav for your emails. Thank you all, of course, for your patience. Doc Manson, it's been a while. Piece of positivity. What's going well? What's good? What's happening? What's new? What's shaking?
Well, I took a day of leisure, you could say, yesterday. Ooh. I got the heck out of the house right around 10:30 in the a.m. I drove about 25 minutes until I pulled into the driveway of a good friend of the show, one GQ. I clambered then into his vehicle. We went to the neighboring town where there is a fantastic barbecue joint. We gorged ourselves upon burnt ends and bacon mac and cheese. And then we moseyed on over to a movie theater that looks like it fell out of the 1980s.
Finally.
And we got ourselves in the theater to watch Ghostbusters, the Frozen...
Empire? Kingdom.
I feel like there's a lot of empires going around right now. Isn't the Godzilla movie something Empire?
I think so.
Huh. Anyways, I was right about that movie. I enjoyed it, and it was an Avengers movie with a Ghostbusters skin on it. And the thing that I think is really weird about that is, yeah, okay, Paul Rudd was there, but beyond that, your heroes in this particular Avengers film were a bunch of children who purport to be 18 years old, but all of them look like they are 15 or younger, as well as a group of geriatric old men. It was just a really weird dynamic and choice to build what essentially is an action adventure movie around children and old people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I enjoyed it. The old people, obviously, there are for me and my age group. They're there for the nostalgia factor, right? They're the original Ghostbusters. We want to see Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson. It took me a minute there to get his name. Like, Annie Potts as well. Like, you know, they're there for us. And I understand the kids are there for the younger generation because ultimately these are now kids' movies. They are movies for children. So I get that. But it is interesting to me because I think I sort of said, you know, 2016, that Ghostbusters, I still think that movie is fine. I know people hated it for a lot of different reasons. It's fine. I thought it was funny, but I did lament at the time that it felt like a different tone, a different type of movie. Again, the old Ghostbusters movies are these comedies in which the main characters are the oddballs. They're the weird ones. The world around them is normal, and they're just placed into this thing acting like complete nutcases. And to me, that's where like the comedy comes from. That 2016 movie, the world was as weird as they were. And so for that reason, the tone shifted and it felt different. Again, fine. They did their own thing. And if anything, when you remake or reboot a franchise, I wish more movies would try to do their own thing. So great. Didn't land as well as I would have hoped, but fine. The thing I'm realizing about the more recent Ghostbusters films, Afterlife, obviously, and now this one, The Frozen Empire, again, they're making different types of movies. These are not comedies anymore. The old movies are comedies. Yes, they fight ghosts. And so there's a bit of an adventure-y aspect. But they are comedies with a little bit of adventure. The Afterlife film, that reboot that they did, was a coming of age movie. It was Stand By Me, but with Ghostbusters paint on top of it. Yes, there were comedic elements in it, but it was, again, a coming of age, heartwarming, feel good film. This movie, again, is an Avengers movie. It's strictly an action adventure movie. It opens with a car chase across New York in which the Ecto-1 is chasing a giant flying serpent, and people are hanging out the side of the vehicle in the gunner seat, and there's a drone with a trap on it. It is the Avengers through and through. And yes, there are comedic elements. There are funny moments. But it's a completely different type of movie. And again, ultimately, I'm fine with it. I wanted more Ghostbusters. I got more Ghostbusters. Okay. But it's very much a different thing tonally. And I don't know that comparing them to the old films is worthwhile, because they're not trying to be the old films, despite slapping the things full of nostalgia and those old characters and actors. So I don't know. I do think if I had any critiques about this particular film, it was bloated. It was overlong. Some of the new actors, like Finn Wolfhard, his character just should not have been in the movie. His character, who was 18, should have gone off to college as a storyline explanation and just not been there. He did nothing of consequence in this film. He had no arc. He was not involved in the main story. He just showed up a couple of times. He was in the movie maybe, he was probably on set for about 2 days more than Bill Murray. Mm-hmm. And Bill Murray probably was there for an afternoon, and that was it. You know what I mean? It didn't seem like he didn't need to be there. His love interest from the first film, this lucky girl, she was shoehorned into being there. The podcast character, the character named Podcast, he also didn't need to be there. And the way that they explained them being there, oh, this one got an internship. Oh, and this one booked the basement of Ray Stantz's occult bookshop as an Airbnb. Like, you could have just had, like, the Spengler family go to New York and, like, oh, I invited my friends from home to visit me over the summer. Like, that would have been a cleaner explanation, requiring less suspension of disbelief, and you still could have gotten the characters there. You know what I mean? And again, ultimately, those characters could have just not been there because they had no bearing on the film. Really, all you needed was the Spangler family minus Wolf Finhart. He could have just, again, gone off to college and not been there at all. A lot of ADRing in the film, too. A lot of re-recording of voice lines. I can tell a lot of Bill Murray stuff was done off the set. He is not facing the camera. You cannot see his lips moving. Very odd. My favorite 80-yard line, though, was Patton Oswalt shows up. As like a working basic at the New York Public Library as a folklore expert. And he clearly is ad-libbing, improvising some of his lines. And very clearly at one point he's describing like this old ceremony or something from pre-Sumerian times, and he clearly must have called this thing like a colloquial fuck fest, and it was ADR'd, but not the whole line. They only ADR'd lewd fest, so I think they only replaced fuck with lewd, and like it doesn't match his lips. He's fully facing the camera. It doesn't match the tone of the rest of the line.
Once again, I'm reminded of watching like Beverly Hills Cop 2 on cable, and you know,
yeah,
I got all you mama jammas, and it's just,
and they did it in the actual cut of the film for some reason. But ultimately I thought that was fine. Like, and I do feel like if they're going to keep going with this, and I hope that they do, because I think they have a good core here. Like, Paul Rudd is excellent as a next generation of Ghostbuster. I even think the relationship thing going on with that Phoebe girl, the younger Spengler kid, it was her coming of age story in the last one. Here she's like 15. I think she's a great addition as well. I think Patton Oswalt, instead of having him just be this random throwaway character in one scene as the folklorist. He should be upgraded full time. He should be the new Ray Stantz. He's got the same sort of interest. He's there to dump expository. He could be the heart. I think he would be a fantastic addition to being a full-time Ghostbuster. Also in this film, there is an actor who I'm not overly familiar with, but I think he's been in a lot of stuff. His name is Kumail Nanjiani. I could be pronouncing that wrong. But he was great. What are you laughing at?
Once I realize who you're talking about, I'm like, oh, one of the, you know, top stand-ups and...
Okay. I don't know that I'm familiar with him from anywhere, but he plays a good part in this movie, and he has excellent delivery. If you wanted to bring him in as the Peter Venkman character, he has that dry delivery and would be a great full-time Ghostbuster as well. Like, they have these actors that they really could bring in and really build a team out of. And yeah, they're missing the boat a little bit by relying on the nostalgia. I will say, though, the one thing I did like about this film is Dan Aykroyd is there, and it was clear he was there, like, full time. He is essentially not a guest actor. He's just in the film as Ray Stantz. And you could tell he was having fun. I know that's a character and an idea, a concept that's really close to his weird occult conspiracy loving heart. And so I'm really happy for him that they did expand his part and let him be there to be involved with this thing. He did a great job. Also, Ernie Hudson, for being 70 odd years old,
looks fantastic.
That dude is jacked. Holy crap. Have you seen him without a shirt on?
I haven't seen him without a shirt on, but I've seen him in a lot of black t-shirts at like premieres and stuff. And yeah, he's
amazing. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
Well, I'm
so
glad.
Anyways, I enjoyed it. So
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
What was your piece of positivity now that I've ranted for 85 minutes about Ghostbusters?
I'm so glad you asked. Despite what I said, it was WrestleMania. I watched 24 matches over the weekend between Saturday and Sunday, which for me, not out of the realm of possibility. But just, you know, anytime I get to see Minoru Suzuki, I am happy. So
was that WrestleMania?
No, he showed up at the Ring of Honor show. So I watched Ring of Honor had Super Card of Honor Friday night. So I watched that Saturday morning. Getting to see Minoru Suzuki, Dalton Castle, there was drama. They released his boys a couple of days before the pay-per-view. They did some roster cuts. They released the boys. That was stupid because you've spent a couple of months building this feud between Dalton Castle and Johnny TV, a.k.a. Johnny Mundo, a.k.a. Johnny whatever. And the whole idea was they kidnapped or they've had a match for custody of the boys and Johnny TV won. So storyline wise, these two boys were fed to a bear and that's why they're no longer on TV. They were fed to a bear. The match was still entertaining. And I don't think you have seen this person, but keep your eye out for a wrestler with a stupid name, but he is the next AJ Styles. His name is Jack Cartwheel. And he is flipping amazing. I've seen him on Ring of Honor. He's always fun to watch. He got to be in the match with, or part of the match with Dalton Castle. That was fun. Baron Corbin and Braun Breaker, heck of a tag team. I hope they get called up to the main roster because they are really enjoyable. It'll be a great way for Braun Breaker to be part of it. There is a wrestler named Oba Femi, who is currently the North American champion. This seems weird to say, but if you could take all three members of New Day, blend them together and make them 6'7", you have Oba Femi. He's young. He's only wrestled maybe 10 or 12 times, but he's going to be a big deal. It was fun to watch him. R-Truth and The Miz reformed the Awesome Truth. They were in a tag team ladder match The tag team titles finally got split back up. There's now a Raw title and a SmackDown title. Awesome Truth won one of those. That was a lovely moment for our Truth specifically, but also for The Miz. That was nice. The match was great. Let's see. Jade Cargill had a WrestleMania debut. They are treating her perfectly. They're treating her almost like Goldberg. She doesn't show, you know, she was part of a six-woman tag match. She wrestled for maybe 2 minutes, did a bunch of power moves, got the pin. Like, that was exactly what you're supposed to do with somebody who is not the best wrestler yet. They are treating her well in the WWE. Gunther versus Sami Zayn, as good as you would expect it to be. Again, I talked about the Drew McIntyre thing. Good for Damian Priest, as someone who remembers watching Punishment Martinez in Ring of Honor way back in the 2010s, to see him now become Damian Priest and win the title. That was a nice moment. AJ Styles versus LA Knight was entertaining. Kevin Owens versus Randy Orton versus Logan Paul was as good as you can expect a Logan Paul match to be. So yeah, it was Bayley got her win, big win at WrestleMania. It was a fun show. I don't know that I will go back to watching weekly wrestling again, but I'm certainly paying more attention now than I was before. They did a very nice job. So thank you, friends, for joining us on this much longer episode than we usually do. We got 100 minutes of conversation for you. Not sure what we'll do next week. Maybe I'll have watched Gremlins 2 and we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll eat some things. Maybe we'll talk about the format and you can send us your ideas and thoughts.
I don't know if you noticed, because it took me a while before I noticed that I did this wrong. But there might be a season 2 of the Go Wrong Show waiting for you to watch.
Oh, I love you so much.
Just wanted to throw that out
there. Oh, I need to change my pants. He is Doc Manson at Doc Manson. My name is DC Matthews at the DC Matthews. Head on over to patreon.com. I skipped part of it. I was so excited. Head over to patreon.com. We always appreciate your support. Send us an email.
You didn't even ask me if I wanted to say it.
I realized I skipped ahead, so I'm sorry. you can do the ending line if you remember what it is.
Now it's time for So Long. But we'll sing just one more song. Thanks for doing your part. You sure are smart. Thanks to me and you and my dog Blue, we can do anything that we want to do. Bye-bye. So long. Bye.
This is now the ending to every show, just so you know.
The end song to Blue's Clues. All right.
Done.